I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. So Myles Garrett has his appeal tomorrow. I think most of the guys, if not all of them, involved in that incident last Thursday, the helmet swinging incident, the fight that Mason Rudolph kind of started on the ground, and then it turned into more of a stand-up fight in which Myles Garrett decided to use Mason Rudolph's helmet against him.
Remember, people were really upset with me for saying that Mason Rudolph started it, because as soon as you say that, people assume you're saying, and because he started it, it's okay if he gets stabbed to death.
Right.
That, honestly, anybody that tried to say that Mason Rudolph started it, it seemed like there was an immediate response of people that assumed you were saying that he deserved what he got.
Right.
It was so frustrating and annoying that intelligent people were turned into simpletons when they felt that that's what you were saying. I would say an appropriate response might be, well, Myles Garrett had a late hit on him. I defend Myles Garrett on that just because when Myles Garrett hit Mason Rudolph was in the act of getting rid of the ball. As a defensive player, you don't know that he got rid of the ball, and you're just trying to finish the play there, because there have been times I did the same thing. I hit a guy, thought he got rid of it, and he'd actually held on to the ball. I let him go. Very embarrassing. I would rather take a late hit than go through that embarrassment again.
It's more defensible.
Right, and he didn't slam him down or anything. So anyway, there was a whole lot to it. Some people oddly were acting like Pouncey was like a hero in that, because he was kicking Garrett on the ground.
Yeah.
That was really weird. I heard, it wasn't Breer, it was somebody out of Boston. Maybe it was Breer. Somebody said, well, yeah, and you know, Pouncey should be commended for sticking up for his guy. You can stick up for your guy without kicking somebody in the head when they're on the ground.
You know why that is? They probably take Tom Brady and they Mad Lib him into that situation.
Yeah.
And they think to themselves, boy, if Myles Garrett ripped off Tom Brady's helmet, can you imagine if Myles Garrett had ripped off Tom Brady's helmet and swung it at his head and hit him in the head? Then that's probably what they're doing up in Boston, some of the folks, is they're thinking about, okay, what would we want our offensive lineman to do? They probably want their offensive lineman to pull out a lead pipe and start beating the guy with
just bring
it.
And
if Aaron Hernandez were still on the team, he might have pulled out a lead pipe.
Like Conor McGregor and just take a bench from the sideline, come on over and just start bashing him with a
WWE
bench.
Style, man. Chair shots and whatnot. So Garrett has his appeal. So this Myles Garrett, this whole Myles Garrett thing has brought Vontaze Burfict back into the limelight a little bit.
Because everybody was comparing it to Vontaze Burfict. Vontaze Burfict, a guy who couldn't handle his temper and just would bludgeon people. Right.
Yeah.
To the point where now he's been suspended indefinitely for an illegal hit this year.
On Jack Doyle, the tight end for the Colts, he jettisoned himself headfirst into Jack Doyle. Not Myles Garrett. Vontaze Burfict, for the first time since being suspended, did an interview with Vic Tafur, who covers football in the Bay Area for The Athletic. And as unhinged as you think Vontaze Burfict was maybe as a player, we don't know if he's ever coming back as a player. He plans to. As unhinged as you think he was as a player, that's how unhinged he is in this interview he does with Vic Tafur. Vontaze Burfict, among many things in the interview, basically defends himself, saying that, hey, man, Myles Garrett, what he did is not a football player, which is true. It's not a football play. You don't rip somebody's helmet off and swing it at him.
Right.
Vontaze Burfict's defense of himself is that, hey, man, I'm doing all these things while out there making tackles during the play, not after the whistle. It's within the context of making football plays.
Right, but he's also doing stuff that like is so avoidable. The thing with Vontaze Burfict was that sometimes defensive backs and linebackers are completely, even if they commit the violation, they're kind of innocent in spirit because they're trying not to lead with the helmet. You know, like a lot of guys, they'll get flagged, and you understand that's just the way of the NFL these days. They'll be trying to keep their head up, but they just, because the offensive player moves, they hit him in the head or something. That's excusable in my mind.
Yeah.
I get it. You're going to get fined. You're going to get flagged for it. Vontaze Burfict was still playing with his head down, still launching himself at people and everything. Like, he was completely reckless, and he should have known better because he'd had multiple warnings.
Yeah.
I almost, I almost think that Vontaze Burfict is still worse, even though it was in the course of play, just because it was never a heat of the moment thing with Vontaze Burfict. It was, he knew what he was getting himself into.
He's like legit angry that Myles Garrett is being sort of, that he's getting tied to Myles Garrett in this whole thing. In this article, Vontaze Burfict is angry that a guy who's swinging a helmet is somehow attached to him. To which I would say, Vontaze, you got to go watch your YouTubes of all of the hits. There have been multiple YouTubes put together, spliced together of all of Vontaze Burfict's dirty plays. I would love to sit down with him and watch them and go, okay, how is this not a dirty play? How is what you did to Antonio Brown in the playoff game back in 2015, how is that in any realm something where you're just making a football play?
But that's not even, yeah, like, we don't have to relitigate all that. His quotes from this are, like, almost deeply disturbing. Okay, this guy's a whack job.
Let me bounce some of them off of you, Seth, and you rate them for their delusion level, okay? All right?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how delusional are
sure,
you?
Sure, sure. There have been times in games when a ref is cussing at me and wanting me to cuss back at him so he can throw me out of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to say,
Vontaze Burfict is saying that happened on a football
field. I'm going to go ahead and say that's an 8 on the level of delusion, because however it happened, I'm guessing maybe it happened once and he's using the plural, if that happened at all. There's other things in this interview where I just don't trust a single damn thing he says, because he's obviously lying and with some of these other things. So I'm going to say that 8. I'm saying he might have gotten in an argument with a ref at some time, but I at no point think that a ref was like trying to bait him into saying something to get him thrown out.
Have you ever seen that on an NFL field?
No.
A referee getting all chesty like an umpire does in baseball?
Other than, like, if a guy goes at him, then the ref... Yeah, actually, NFL officials, to their credit, do a pretty good job of keeping their calm while they're getting screamed at. Yeah. It's not like in baseball where they actually give it back. They just kind of take the abuse.
The only referee I can think of where this would have made sense would have been Ed Hockley. If I'm Ed Hockley, I'm picking fights with everybody out there.
Yeah.
Because I'm so jacked up. Okay, here's the next one. I met with Roger Goodell in New York. This is Vontaze Burfict. And he was a total bitch. He was a bitch. He didn't let anybody speak. He rushed us in and out of the meeting. The meeting was bull bleep. He already had the suspension in his hand. So he's openly calling the commissioner of the NFL a bitch. How do you like that one?
I'd say like 4. Yeah. Maybe a 3.
That's maybe not, like, delusional as much as it is funny.
I think there might have been a chance for him to maybe talk his way out of it by that point, but he's already established himself that in those situations, I'm guessing he's not at his best. Yeah. So, yeah.
I honestly think some of the games are rigged. The refs pick and choose when they want to throw their flags. There are flags on every play. The refs determine the outcome of games. So I just chose not to watch the game for the most part.
Now, this is where I'm going to say, okay, he said for the most part.
Yeah.
So he says, I chose not to watch the game for the most part. He starts, do you have a quote in here about his daughters in here?
No, I was just going to tell that story.
Okay,
go ahead and you tell it.
He starts off by saying that he was watching the game with his daughters. Several times in this interview, he takes great pains to point out that he has daughters that he cares about.
Ages 4 and 2.
So with this 4-year-old and 2-year-old, he claims he was watching the end of the Monday night football game with his 4-year-old and 2-year-old daughters, because everybody knows how much 2 and 4-year-olds love watching football at 11 p.m. at
right,
night.
That's, yeah, thank you, yes. Yeah. Yeah,
but then later, twice later in the article, he claims that he doesn't watch the game anymore.
Right.
So he's lying about one of those two things, right. Obviously.
Right, right.
So as far as them playing with the rig, that'd be careful here, because a certain portion of our listeners think that games are rigged. He should know better, so I'm going to say 8 on the... No, I'll say 9 on the level of delusion.
Yeah. Most of these now are just... Most of the rest of the quotes I pulled are just him taking various different wordings of defending the crazy stuff that he does on a football field.
You know what I'd say is, this is one thing that, I'm almost leaning towards this. This isn't fair, but I'm almost leaning towards, when I hear people invoke their fatherhood in defense of themselves, I almost immediately think, all right, you're guilty.
Like, what, Brandon,
like,
Taubman.
It's never like, at some point, where in somebody's mind is it like, well, I'm a father of children, how could I be a jerk?
Right.
Well, I don't know. Have you read the news lately?
Yeah.
Many people who are fathers do horrendous things.
Yeah.
I almost feel like if that's your go-to defense, then you've got nothing better than that.
Yeah.
People know that fathers can be D-bags.
I mean, yes.
Half of them have fathers who themselves were D-bags.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you think, apparently Myles Garrett is going to New York for his appeal? Which I guess not all players do. Some of them just, you know, they let their representation handle it. He's actually going to New York for his appeal. Do you think this thing gets bargained down?
Well, let's see. Now they haven't.
It's indefinite.
So it's indefinite, yeah. Right? I think the NFL, from a PR standpoint, and for doing the right thing, all of that, like this is using
I believe
a helmet as a weapon on a bear head.
I believe it's indefinite, with the caveat that it's at least the rest of the season.
Right. It's okay. I think he can, by showing genuine contrition, which he actually already has, he's apologized
he did right
for
after
it.
The game.
I think he has to go in there and really just take it, you know, and not try to excuse himself at all, explain what was going on. I think he's got the chance. I think the NFL will likely be looking at this as, how is this going to look and how is he going to handle it in the offseason? Because if he's out there in September of next year, we want to be sure that it's not one of these lingering issues. I think what he needs to do is go in and explain that not only does he feel bad about this, but he's going to clean up the way he plays the game next year. He was toeing the line this year at times with some of his late hits and whatnot. He needs to convince them that he's genuinely going to change that part of his game too.
Yep.
Their fear would be that in week one he goes out there and he's pile driving quarterbacks into the turf.
We're getting a lot of slogans for the Astros sent in the spirit of the state of South Dakota creating a campaign against methamphetamine that says "Meth, we're on it." We asked people to send in some slogans for the Astros to help get people kind of stoked up to buy tickets and whatnot, you know, just your basic marketing slogans.
Yeah, that might not be that great, but it'll get your attention.
Yeah. The Astros, steal it back.
Let's see. Texans, home in January, when you need us.
Oh, they see people are sending in Texans ones?
Too, yeah. Texans, always sold out.
Astros, we're watching you. That's pretty good.
Astros, this is a good Houston one. Astros banging and swinging.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of banging.
Some of the swangas, incorporating the swangas into the banging also. Good for you.
Yes, the bat in the garbage can. Astros banging out wins. Astros, get trashed. Astros, bang, bang. Astros, tape, you're on it.
There's a lot of Astros ones, aren't there?
The Astros are, I would say, 85% of them. They're the most snark-friendly team right now.
The Astros are, right. Yeah. That's, you know, one of our...
Astros, blow the whistle. That's a good one. Double meaning with the train out in left field.
Oh, that's a really good one. That's a double meaning. That's
a double
exactly
meaning.
What we
that might be the
for.
Winner because of the double
steal
meaning.
Steal it back is a good one, too, because it's a variation to take it back, so that's good.
Yep.
Yeah, some of you guys really got the nuance of this. Congratulations. There's way too many. There's probably some really good ones in here that we can't get. Let's see. Oh, there was a good Browns one in here. Miles Garrett's head, pouncies on it.
All right, keep sending them in, 713-572-4610. There is a pattern developing with James Harden. Are we okay with this? We'll tell you what it is next. All right, so Seth, I was just looking up at the TV screen, and Russell Westbrook was quoted after the game last night, in which James Harden scored 39 points. Russell Westbrook had a triple-double. In a lot of ways, Clint Capella was great last night. I think Clint had a big game last night. He seems to be getting his sea legs under him now.
I never doubted you, Clint. Ever. I did.
Yeah,
that's a lie.
I was about to say. And I wanted you to call yourself out.
I was starting to get nervous about Capella just because it's coming off, okay, now that he's had a full year with that big contract and he was a disappointment in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
Is this... I've never thought of him as a guy that would get complacent,
no.
And yet somehow those fears started seeping in. It looks more like what plagued the entire team, which was D'Antoni was very easy on them to try to keep their legs fresh during the preseason, plus they took the trip to Asia, and I think everybody was just a little, they didn't have their sea legs yet.
They're playing their way into shape. Clint went 20-20 last night, 22 points, 20 rebounds last night. So in some ways it was like your dream fantasy box score if you own a bunch of Rockets in fantasy basketball. But Russell Westbrook was trying to implore the media to not normalize what James Harden is doing. James Harden was the player of the week again.
Right, where it becomes he's on this ridiculous tear where he's
like
averaging 40 points a game over the course of 2 weeks.
Yeah, like crazy. Like last year, kind of crazy.
And it's not even 2 weeks. How many games now is the...
Well, they've won 8 in a row.
Yeah, it's just this extreme scoring binge that he's on. I don't know what you do, though, other than, I mean, do you have a parade every time he does it? It's hard not to normalize it.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing is, I take into account who the quotes are coming from. It's Russell Westbrook, who has not been around this every day.
That's true.
You know, it's new to him.
You know what Russell Westbrook is like? He's like when a new sports radio host comes into town and says, huh, I'll tell you what, you guys don't appreciate James Harden.
Yeah.
You need to have been. You're like, settle down, buddy. Listen, yeah. we've been here for a while. We're cool.
I would go as far as to say, Seth, that and maybe I'm the culprit. Maybe I'm the person Russell Westbrook is speaking to. In fact, I think I am with what I'm about to say. And I love James Harden. I love watching James Harden. I know there's people around the country that don't like his style of play. Maybe it's because I'm a Rocket fan. I enjoy watching James Harden. I enjoy tracking the stats during the game to see if he goes out and gets 30, 35, 40 again. I more than anything else, I think about what this team is going to be like once James Harden isn't playing anymore. You know, once the post-Harden, I think we're still 5 years away from that. But, you know, anytime you start to think about complaining about James Harden, look around the NBA and see how teams are doing that think they have all-star players and are struggling to win 38 or 40 games. Harden individually, we saw it in Minnesota this weekend. You have James Harden on your team, you're winning 50 games.
Yeah.
I don't care who the other four guys are on the court. There's not many guys in the NBA you can say about that. I know that he needs to win the postseason. I get it. But maybe I'm sort of the person Russell Westbrook is talking to here, because I feel like, yes, there is a bit of a pattern with all this, where the first step is James gets off to kind of a slow start. He's sort of trying out new things, you know, whether it's the step back three or the floater or whatever he's added to his game. The next step is he kicks it into gear. He begins perfecting the new stuff. The third step is what we saw last year in spades, which was the 32 straight games where he goes over 30 points. He goes on some tear that all of a sudden begins the MVP debate with Harden every year.
Mm-hmm.
And even his harshest critics come out Thursday after Thursday night games on TNT or on The Jump. Even his harshest critics in February and March say, boy, I got to tell you, even though I'm a James Harden critic, he is doing some things that are unbelievable. And then the postseason rolls around, and then things tighten up. And then you and I were talking before the show, and I thought you made a great point, which is, and I'll let you make the point.
Well,
the point about the way the playoffs are different from the regular season in terms of attacking a guy like James Harden.
That's where it's because I don't even want to make it like it's a criticism or anything. It's just that what happens in the playoffs is teams start to get a rhythm on you and a beat on you. There's something about, this is why I always get careful talking about this. Whenever you start talking about mid-range jumpers, people act like if you think that anybody should ever shoot a mid-range jumper, that you're a caveman that doesn't understand math. There's a certain predictability to the way the Rockets play in their complete abandonment of the mid-range jumper, even though I know that's changed a little bit, especially with Chris Paul in these last few years. It'll change with Russell Westbrook. But their style of play, that over the course of seven games, good defensive teams start to feel the rhythm of how the Rockets are playing, and it gets easier to defend. You know, the Spurs in various series have been really good at this, where they understand exactly how they can sprint out to close out threes aggressively and then get back in to defend the paint and largely abandon areas of the floor to defend. I think there's something to that. As far as his Harden's ability to draw fouls, he still gets the calls and he still makes free throws, but versus the really good teams, those guys are really adept, especially over the course of seven games, at learning how to defend without fouling as much.
Yeah.
And it's just that it's a difference between regular season basketball and postseason basketball. And I think sometimes people get trapped into talking about, well, in the postseason, it slows down. It's a half court game. It's more than just that. It's also your specific opponent. How do you adjust to playing them? And I think that still remains James Harden's biggest challenge, is overcoming that hump of becoming just a regular season scoring machine into doing it, into figuring out the finer aspects of defeating teams in the playoffs. And I don't want to make it seem like it's insurmountable. The biggest problem has been that the Golden State Warriors existed
Yes.
the last several years.
Yeah.
They've played well enough to be a championship team in different eras. It's just they got stuck in the Golden State Warriors era.
Yeah, look, we got to see what the Lakers are, and I'm anxious to see the Rockets play the Lakers. You know, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Dwight Howard's actually playing pretty decent for the Lakers right now. So we got to see what exactly this is in terms of, are the Lakers just a really good team, or are they a team that with the combination of these stars can become maybe not as transcendent as the Warriors. No one's winning 73 games ever again because the load management part of the NBA is never going to allow a team to win 73 games again. But are they dominant enough to where you go, boy, this is a juggernaut you can't overcome? Or, man, this would be the fun part if you're a Rocket fan, Seth. Do we finally live in an NBA without the Golden State Warriors where there's enough parity and balance in the upper echelon? You know, not across the league. I think the good teams are still noticeably better than the bad teams. But are we in an NBA where James Harden's game may be good enough to take the Rockets to an NBA finals?
Right, and I think it is and it has been. It's not... When I can bring up those things, those are the challenges the Rockets face in the playoffs. They've overcome those challenges at times. It's just that's why sometimes but it's also why you don't get too carried away with the regular season success, because some of it is just flat out the way the Spurs used to be in the regular season from year to year, where there were some years where they weren't a championship team, but they're still crushing people in the regular season because they were just so refined as a group. James Harden is the equivalent in that you're going to crush a lot of teams in the regular season just because James Harden is so good.
Yeah.
By the way, it's always the fouls in the playoffs. Harden actually has more free throws per 36 minutes in the playoffs. No, he's actually a little bit less. He's seven per 36 minutes in the playoffs. He's like 7.5 in the regular season.
Yeah, and as much...
But it's not as big a drop-off as people want to believe it is.
As much hand-wringing as was going on early in the season with the Rockets,
yeah.
Here they sit a half game back of the Lakers for the number one seed in the Western Conference. They're 11-3 now.
Yeah, so that's all. Does anybody genuinely feel... I don't know what... When people implore you to not ignore Harden's scoring streaks, I don't know what they want us to do. Are you supposed to... It's impossible. If I have a really good steak every night, and that becomes my standard dinner every night, I can't come in the next day and be like, Sean! Did you hear about this steak I had last night?
Yeah.
It gets old.
Yeah, and the reason Seth's bringing this up is because we brought up Russell Westbrook imploring people to not normalize what James Harden is doing. Basically, stand up, pay attention to what James Harden is doing. Again, I think there's two things at work with Russell Westbrook when it comes to him kind of taking up for James, I guess.
Yeah.
One is, as I mentioned earlier, the newness of it to Russ. It's new to Russ to be around this James. He's played with James before. They were teammates in Oklahoma City. Not this James. He was opposing James before. Now he watches it every night, so he gets to see it. So it is kind of new to him. I think some of it, too, is sort of a lot of what we saw with Russell Westbrook maybe through the first handful of games when this Rocket team was, frankly, a little bit wonky early in the season, where it felt like Russ was maybe being a little bit... He was trying to overcompensate or being over-accommodating as a new teammate. You know? And I think maybe there's some of that baked into it where it's like, I'm new here. It's James's. This may be Russell Westbrook's subtle way of telling people this is James's team.
It's like your first week in an apartment in college where you actually take care of your own dishes every time.
Yeah.
You know, like the first week or two, you're like, oh, yes. I always wash my dishes immediately after I'm done with them.
Yes.
And then, you know, by fast February, forward to a month later.
The dishes will be stacking up in Westbrook's sink by February.
Yeah. I choose to interpret this comment by Russell Westbrook as a shot at Kevin Durant. I choose to think that, hey, buddy, I've been in the NBA a long time, never had a teammate like this.
Ooh, I like that.
Let's read it that way.
Yeah.
Why don't you put a fancy headline on that and put it out into the blogosphere?
That'll
get a lot of clicks.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Was Russell Westbrook throwing shade at Kevin Durant? Probably.
Yeah. And put probably in the headline as well.
Yep.
By the way, the Nuggets third in the Western Conference, even with the Rockets in the loss column, that is the Rockets' next opponent. They travel to Denver tomorrow to take on the Denver Nuggets. I'm going to bring our conversation from the break onto the air, Seth. We were in here talking to John Lopez about the Kaepernick situation.
Oh, great.
No. I'm bringing it on the air because I came up with an idea that you guys are both like, wow, that's a really good idea.
It was a really good idea, yeah. Okay, good. I thought we were going to get all heavy for
No.
Okay.
We were just talking about the workout that the NFL had scheduled for him. 25 teams had flown to Atlanta to be at that workout. They changed the location, they being Kaepernick's team. They changed the location because they didn't want to sign the waiver that the NFL put in front of him, which was different than the normal combine/player tryout waiver.
A lot of attorneys saying, like, oh, I wouldn't have my client sign that waiver.
Even conservative attorneys, like you said.
Well, one of our listeners who's a big-time conservative attorney and has been pretty critical of Kaepernick, he emails me about 10 times a week. This guy's awesome.
Yeah.
He has very good ideas. We disagree a lot, but he's very good. He's a very intelligent guy. But he's kind of been anti-Kaepernick. But in this scenario, he's been like, what the hell was the NFL thinking or doing here? Yeah, it just it, a lot of attorneys have said the way the NFL has even phrased its statements seem they would raise the suspicions of a lot of attorneys. Right. That just something about this just didn't seem quite right.
Yeah. So he didn't sign that. He moves the workout same day. Moves the workout 60 miles away from Atlanta. 8 of the 25 teams are able to and want to still send scouts or personnel people to that workout. So there were 8 teams in attendance. And we got talking in here with Lopez during the break about, you know, if Kaepernick really wanted to show off for the NFL and have his own workout, which is ultimately what he had to do.
Yeah.
Why didn't he just do that somewhere along the way? You know, schedule an open tryout, have Nike, not tryout, but an open workout, have Nike involved, make it a big deal, that kind of thing. To which I said to you guys, he should have just done it in Indianapolis at an alternative location to the combine.
That would have been, that's really smart.
Because you got, that's one time, it's not during the season.
Everybody's there, you can sneak somebody over there. If you're a team that doesn't want the publicity or something, just sneak somebody on over.
Do it on the day where quarterbacks aren't doing anything at the combine.
Mm-hmm.
You do it somewhere else. You know, there's got to be an indoor field on the campus at Butler or
you know where they could
something
do it?
Like that.
They could do it on the roof of St. Elmo's Steakhouse there, since that's where everybody seems to be. Get ready up there with some brandy and some cigars or some cognac or whatever you drink.
Have you eaten there before?
No.
Okay.
It's supposed to be, I don't know, the shrimp. I don't know. I have a hard time with people bragging about the shrimp at a place in Indianapolis.
God, I feel like that's where I need to go this weekend. I'm going to be flying into Indianapolis.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be in Indianapolis. Boy, Sean is doing pretty well with the endorsement money, huh? You're just going to fly up to Indianapolis just to eat some shrimp at St. Elmo's?
My daughter is running in the NCAA championships.
Ah, okay. You're going to be up there already.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm going to be up there, too. I'm going to be up there.
It was
a good year for me last year, but it was I got a good bundle and save from Expedia.
Your daughter who's at the height of discipline as an athlete and who watches everything she eats and is very, very careful. You're going to say, honey, good luck tomorrow. I'm going to go out and get loaded at a steakhouse.
Apple didn't fall far from the tree.
Most
people look at me and see, that's the picture of restraint right there.
They look at you and they're like, what is she?
No, it's, yeah.
She's running away from her father's genetics. She wants to.
That's why she's so fast.
That's why she's running.
The best thing I can do is show up at the race.
I don't want to end up like this guy. Right. I got to keep running.
Right. I've paid people to stand at various places along the course holding fat heads of me.
This is your future if you don't run faster.
Like, wow. She PR'd by 30 seconds. Incredible.
Is she nervous?
Is she? No, I don't think so.
Does she get nervous? Is she kind of just?
No, she's been injured.
Yeah,
she was in a walking boot 3 weeks ago.
It kind of releases her from expectations, I suppose.
It does.
She was in a walking boot for so long. This is all gravy, right?
She's as free and loose and stress free as I've seen her since she started running.
Well, she'll probably win the damn thing.
She may. Yeah, she may. No expectations.
You know what's going to be awesome? Then they'll have to. So they'll start a whole new training regimen after her. Like, okay, don't actually run. Just get on the elliptical a lot.
Yeah, that's all she's been doing is the elliptical.
It'll be the Judy Pendergast protocol.
That's right.
I'm pretty much following it just because I despise running, but I need my cardio.
Same here.
I'm on the elliptical.
I got to sweat. I don't do it for nearly as long as she does. So, the Texans are in a situation that they have not been in since Deshaun Watson has been the starting quarterback. They're coming off a double-digit loss during the regular season. Not just double digits. They did it up big time. They lost by 34 points. Bill O'Brien is not concerned, Jonesy, about Deshaun Watson bouncing back from this game.
Yeah, I think that you said it. You used the word life. So if you know anything about Deshaun Watson, like in the whole scheme of things relative to how he sees life and how he attacks things, that was one day that is over. And, you know, we'll clean some things up and he'll be focused on Indianapolis. You know, he's overcome a hell of a lot more than that. So he'll be ready to go.
All right. So Seth, I tried to come up with some numbers that are going to make the people feel better about the Texans and how they're going to bounce back from this loss on Sunday. Under Bill O'Brien. They've not had to experience this with Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson, but Bill O'Brien as a head coach, you know, and I think for the pluses and minuses of Bill O'Brien, I think one of the pluses is his players generally play hard for him. My question that I was asking myself is, do they play hard and do they bounce back? Have they bounced back from adverse situations in season before to where they win, to where they win games? So here's what I did. I went and I found all the double-digit losses that the Texans have experienced under Bill O'Brien. And I fine-tuned the filter to chop off the last month of 2017 when that team was mathematically eliminated from the playoff race. And they had no quarterback and no J.J. Watt. That was a, they had 25 guys on IR. So that part of the Bill O'Brien era doesn't really mirror what they're in right now, which is they're a pretty good team, anywhere from a decent to a pretty good team who's coming off a big loss. So I went and found all the double-digit losses while the Texans were still mathematically in it to make the postseason. There were 10 of them in the regular season, two in 2014, three each in 2015 and 2016, two in 2017. The Texans are you ready? 9-1 in games under Bill O'Brien following a double-digit loss the previous week while they're still mathematically eligible for the postseason.
It's an impressive number. It feels like there's more substance to that number than there is to some of these other stats where it's, hey, Bill O'Brien is such and such when they have a lead at halftime. All those, even though that's a pretty impressive number they have on that, games in which they have a lead at halftime.
Yeah.
At least that this
that's
year.
One of those self-fulfilling numbers sometimes.
Yeah,
though.
It's like, oh, well, yeah, in a game in which you're winning and you jumped out to a lead early.
You kept the lead.
Yeah, you kept the lead. Yeah. Is that as impressive as it sounds? Where this is coming off a loss, it's kind of, it's not like, well, how do I know for sure, Sean, that it hasn't been just a bunch of patsies and they've been lucky after this?
I'm glad you asked that,
Seth.
They
do play in the AFC South, which until the last few years was not always the toughest division.
I'm glad you asked that. Rather than go through every team that they beat following a double-digit loss, as I am wont to do, I went to the spread on each of the games in those subsequent weeks. Okay, that's the only way we can really measure expectation for the Texans quantitatively. What was the spread on the game in Las Vegas, and how did they do against the spread? In other words, were these a bunch of games where they were favored by 7 or 8 points over crappy Jags and Titans teams, and they won on last-second field goals? If that were the case, then that's a fair counterpoint. However, in those 10 games in which they're 9-1 straight up, they are 8-1-1 against the spread.
They're a darling of Vegas is what they
are. And they've covered the spread by nearly a touchdown, by 6 points.
If I read you right, what you're doing here is accusing the Texans of sandbagging for the purpose of winning the next game for Vegas.
For the purposes of my study. Yes.
Yes.
They're creating. Yes.
This is what they need to do.
They're creating a great gambling narrative is what they're doing.
No, question.
In all seriousness, this is an impressive number. To me, it's an impressive number.
Now, the important thing that's relevant here is that the Texans are favored versus the Colts.
They are. Some of these games, they've been underdogs following the
I know, but what I'm saying is if they're going to spread, they're favored. So if they're going to beat the spread, then they're also going to win the game.
Correct. Yeah, they're favored by 4 points.
So if you're a person that doesn't care about gambling, the thing you care about is, oh, wow, beating the spread in this case means it's not just a win; it's a decided win.
That's right.
A nice victory.
Yeah.
Did the line open at 4 points?
It opened 4.5.
4.5. So it came down a little bit after just because the Texans got drubbed and people are catching that, or is it?
Yeah, I think so. I was a little surprised it was 4.5.
Is T.Y. Hilton? We don't know for sure whether he's playing or not.
Yeah, the news has been positive on him, but no confirmation that he's going to play.
I thought the news was positive on Will Fuller last week until right before the game.
How much of Fuller and Roby being held out? I know you don't know the direct answer. It's not like you talked to O'Brien, but just knowing what you know about an NFL schedule and the human anatomy, how much of it do you think them holding Fuller and Roby out of the Baltimore game, which in retrospect, I'm glad they did. Those guys would not have made a 34-point difference in that game.
No. Yeah,
but how much of it was a Thursday divisional game following
and
that?
This is the thing, because I asked Vandy this question in the pregame, and I think he thought I was asking something different than it was. I'm not saying that they would have held him out because the Colts game is more important. I'm thinking they would have held them out because with hamstrings especially, there's always the risk of bringing them back too early. So what you're doing in bringing them back too early in a week where there's a Thursday night game is, hey, what if he actually feels okay when we bring him back on Sunday, but that's still too much too fast, and then he re-injures it on Thursday.
Yeah.
So I think if you're going to be conservative and careful, they may have thought, all right, these guys feel good, but it hasn't been long enough, and we're just going to go ahead and be careful and wait and play him Thursday night. That's what I'm hoping.
It would be huge. And you said earlier in the show, you think it's bigger for the Texans to get back Fuller than it is for the Colts to get back T.Y. Hilton.
I think it is, just because Fuller changes the entire dynamic of this offense. We have the stats on how much better how much better Deshaun Watson is with Fuller versus without him.
Only one of those games I just outlined, the 10 games that O'Brien lost by double digits while they're mathematically still in the playoff hunt, only one of them involved Deshaun Watson, and that was when they got destroyed in week one of 2017 by the Jags, the Hurricane Harvey game. And then Watson gets his first start the following week, and they go into Cincinnati, and they beat Cincinnati on a Thursday night. The rest of them are all Fitzy and Mallett and Brock and Hoyer games.
The other thing I'd say about Fuller versus T.Y. Hilton is that T.Y. Hilton this year has been limited to a large degree. He's not averaging nearly as many yards per catch, where Fuller is still that guy that stretches the field and has that explosive deep threat ability all the time.
Yep, absolutely. So I guess my overall message with this record of O'Brien in games following double-digit losses is I think it's safe to say his team generally doesn't wallow in those bad losses.
Yeah.
When he gets up in front of a podium in year six and says, these guys are going to turn the page pretty quickly, he's got a lot of evidence that he's coached teams that are able to turn the page pretty quickly. And that's good news for Texan fans. Landry Locker jumps in. What's happening, Landry?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Feeling awesome, man.
Yeah. Are you really? Feeling yesterday, awesome. You were agitated. Every time I tuned in, you were flipping out.
Well, I mean, it was the... Seth, I was medicated, man. I mean, I'm talking like... All I was doing was sipping syrup, sleeping, and basically...
Syrup?
Basically on cough
syrup
medicine.
Syrup or scissor?
Both. Whatever you want to call it.
No, you weren't doing a scissor. You're not South Dakota. You were taking cough medicine.
Yeah, prescribed cough medicine.
Yeah, okay.
It'd be funnier if it was the scissor.
I was very, very medicated this weekend. Like, very.
So that's where, okay, so you're angry yesterday because by yesterday.
Well, I was pissed off about the game.
No, but also when you're taking the cough syrup and everything, you're not sleeping as much as you are knocked out, so you don't get the REMs. Mm. You're not getting restful sleep. So you start getting agitated like you're sleep deprived.
Yeah, and I mean, when you watch what you watch on Sunday, combine that with that, and I lost my voice the last hour of the show, so you know, I just had to go home and kind of rest, man. Like it was a total struggle. I was also kind of angry at doctors. I'm not trying to pull back the curtain too
much. Which ones?
Just the ones that you go to.
Kevorkian.
And they basically feel like they just have to give you a seminar on every over-the-counter medicine. If I wanted that, I would just go on the internet. But I wanted a shot. I didn't get my shot. So I got prescribed some cough medicine. And yesterday I was probably a day away from being ready, but I had to come in Reaction Monday, try to hit the ground running. It was a frustrating day for me.
What kind of shot did you want?
The steroid shot that they gave me before we went to Minnesota, when it basically just changed my life or whatever.
Did it really?
Oh, yeah. I was dying before we went to Minnesota a couple Super Bowls ago, and I got the shot, and boom.
And why wouldn't they give it to you this time?
I think she acted like I was asking for heroin or something like that.
It's not like getting a cortisone shot is going to make you buzzed or anything.
Yeah, I wasn't
or
asking
will
for
it.
Morphine or something like that. I just thought, you know, maybe you can give me a shot. And then, you know what? It's hard to get cough syrup in Houston. I had to go to 3 different pharmacies. And they were all out. So I went to the CVS on Kirby. I went to the CVS on Alabama. It was just
and then they want 3 forms of ID, your birth certificate.
I blame Jamarcus Russell.
Take a blood test.
I blame a lot of people. Rest in peace, CJ Screw.
Did Jamarcus Russell? Who got in trouble post career for the purple drink?
Somebody Jamarcus Russell.
He got caught with it. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
That's right. Oh, look, he was
Walter White.
He's an industrious young man.
Yeah. was,
it used to be a popular thing, man. It used to be a popular thing. But, man, I was definitely under the weather yesterday. But I was pissed. But we're moving on. That's the good thing about having a game on Thursday.
You can look and sound better today.
I know. Thank you, man. Yeah, thank you very much.
Did you get some of that black market cortisol?
I didn't get that. I didn't get that.
Come on. I bought a
cortisol injection on the street.
I had some Vicks.
Don't vape it.
I haven't used some Vicks. That Vicks works, man.
Vicks VapoRub?
Oh, yeah. Vicks. I saw you. Lopez gave you that advice, huh?
I've been taking some pills. I've been doing a lot. I feel good, man.
Okay. All right. Well, what's up for the show today?
Right off the top, there's something that needs to stop in regards to the Texans. And it's motivated by what happened yesterday on Monday night. We got to stop doing this. We really do. If we truly want the Texans to take the next step, we got to stop doing something that we've been doing recently. I think you might have even done it this show, Sean, to be honest with you. We're going to go in depth on Reich versus Bill O'Brien. There's four that they've met 4 times. We're going to go in depth at all the highs and lows of each matchup. There's a lot of remember Clowney, the Clowney offsides, the Clowney fumble recovery. There's a lot of emotion in that, so we'll go through that.
You know what? Speaking of, we talked about this earlier, like Jerry Sandusky, the broadcaster.
That sucks.
How he should have changed his name.
Would you have changed your name?
I would have changed my name in a heartbeat. As soon as that scandal was what it was, I would have changed it. I would at least change my... Yes, I wouldn't have changed my last name. There's plenty of fine Sanduskys in the world.
You would have gone by the middle?
Maybe my middle name, or I would have changed it to Gary Sandusky or something. But likewise, Frank Reich, shame on him for not changing his last name. Three generations of Reich people have been like, well, sure, Hitler was big into the Third Reich and all, but we're just going to stick with this name. We're going to ride it out. What kind of Nazi sympathizing SOB do we have coming into town this weekend? Thursday even.
Now that is vilifying an opponent.
Frank
right there.
Reich. Yeah. How can you think Frank Reich with not thinking about Hitler? It's ridiculous.
Now that is something nobody's talking about right there.
It is.
I love
so,
that.
So what was the other thing you had
coming up? We got John McClain. I texted him and I said, hey, John, what do you want to get into? I texted him last night. What do you want to get into? And he said, today he said the usual. What the hell? Whatever the hell that means.
You know what I mean. You know me, slanging and banging. Let's get into some. You got any of that scissor lift?
Butter pecan.
You know when McClain comes in and he's like, down, ripped up,
chopped and screwed, Johnny.
So what time is John McClain on scissor coming?
He's at 10:40.
10:40. Okay.
He's at 10:40. He was pretty critical of the Texans after the game. I wonder if he's going to have that same energy. I'm intrigued by it.
All right, there it is. Landry Locker and John Lopez in the loop.
And John McClain up on your slab.
Seth, I'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
No, why not?
All right, we'll do it tomorrow all over again, everybody. 6 a.m. We hope to see you then. Until then, have a great day, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.